I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With liberty and justice for all. Good evening, Global Patriots. You're listening to Global Patriot Radio. Every Global Patriot Radio night is area code 319-527-6706. That's area code 319-527-6706. And I'm joined by that great American Big Al. Good evening, Al. How you doing?
I'm doing terrific, Vito. Great to be here as always. And how are you, sir?
I am doing well. Fresh off of a holiday weekend. Had a nice five-day weekend. Actually, five and a half, I guess, because I took Wednesday afternoon off. I just decided that I was going to do nothing. How about you?
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
Good weekend. Ate a lot on Thanksgiving. Played some golf. And very enjoyable.
Hey, and you know what? I'm going to give a shout-out to your Florida State Seminoles. This past weekend was rivalry weekend in football, and it also brought the infamous Florida State-Florida game. The Florida State Seminoles were 11-0 going in to meet the Florida Gators at the Swamp, who were 5-6. I'm going right into it, Al, because congratulations, the Florida State Seminoles beat the Florida Gators 24-15. More importantly, the Florida State Seminoles 12-0. Somehow they're ranked number 5 in the nation. This should drop them down into the top 4, and they should earn a spot, although they do have the ACC Conference Championship next week against Louisville, who lost to Kentucky, by the way, 38-31. But this should earn Florida State a spot into the Final Four of college football to determine the national champion.
Well, it should, since we lost our first-string quarterback to an ankle injury that was horrific, career season-ender for him. But our backup quarterback did come in, and it was a very scary start. But kudos to FSU. Way to go. Seminoles.
Yeah.
Indians.
How impressive.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Great coaching.
You know, you gotta say, you have to give it to the Florida State coach, man. He had a good backup. I don't care what anybody says. You know, you don't take the Gators rivalry weekend. You don't take your opponent lightly. It doesn't matter what their record is. Like the Gators at 5-6, I came in and carried that football team and helped them carry them you know, they won 24-15. That's a really, you know, it's they won, and they won, I wouldn't say convincingly, but they won handedly. So
enough. Good enough. And then
yeah.
We got Michigan, Ohio State. Another great game.
The harborless Michigan Wolverines held on to beat the Ohio State Buckeyes 30-24 with a late interception with about 17 seconds remaining in the game. Michigan advances to the Big Ten Championship game against Hank Jones' Hawkeyes, Iowa Hawkeyes, who won their game against, was it Nebraska? They won like 10-3. Some ridiculous points. I'm sorry, Hank. They just got no offense whatsoever. Alabama. Did you watch Alabama-Auburn game, the Iron Bowl?
I caught it for a few minutes, but I didn't watch the whole thing, unfortunately. But
Mamma mia. Mamma mia. Oh, my. You know, I know we can get sidetracked with college football, and I don't live and die for college football, but, you know, I did make it a point to try to watch the Florida State Seminoles, and then I a little bit of the Michigan game, but I did. I always try to watch the Alabama game, Alabama Auburn, and it doesn't matter what Auburn's record is. Auburn has a losing season this year, folks. With 32 seconds remaining in the game, you've got Alabama's down. Okay, they're down to Auburn by seven. By what was it? They were down 24-20. A field goal doesn't do anything for them. They have to score a touchdown, but they end up getting a penalty. Fourth down and 31, less than 32 seconds left. The Alabama quarterback, I believe his name is Jalen Milroe, he finds his wide receiver Isaiah Bond in the corner of the end zone, running towards the corner. He throws the perfect pass over the shoulder to Isaiah Bond. Bond catches the pass for a touchdown. They score the extra point, the field goal. It's now 27-24. There is absolute heart failure at the Alabama-Auburn Iron Bowl game every year. You know, a couple of years ago, Alabama's winning, kicked the field goal. They missed a field goal. It comes up late short, and the Auburn Tiger defender catches the ball in the end zone and runs back 104 yards for a touchdown, and they win the game. And this year, freaking Alabama pulls out an upset, so to speak, after being upset by Auburn with 32 seconds left, and they win the game. Fourth and 31. Virtually impossible.
Yeah, that was definitely the most exciting game of the weekend, and there were others, but they win the prize. So, congratulations to the Crimson Tide
and the Georgia Bulldogs. They beat their rivalry week Georgia Tech 31-23. Although they did not dominate Georgia Tech, but they still won, so that might be enough to retain the number one spot. Michigan certainly would go to number two. Washington held off to beat their rivals, Washington State 24-21. They're number four. You have Florida State number five. With Ohio State losing, they should drop to number five, and that should move Florida State to number four and Washington to number three. Everybody should probably move down, although I think Michigan could end up number one for beating Ohio State. But all those games were not blowouts. They were all within, 8 points. So every one of the top games, except for Florida State, they won by nine. So I think it should be interesting what goes on, right?
Well, yeah, the Ohio State-Michigan game may as well have been a bowl game. It was just that exciting. So,
really was. It was a really, really cool football weekend. If you like your TV and you follow football, you had enough of it for the weekend, Friday, Saturday. And then if you still follow NFL, there was Thursday and Sunday. Can't report any NFL games. Didn't watch any. I take that back. I did. It was on Thursday. The Detroit Lion game was on. Sorry, I forgot. We got a couple of fans, relative to our Detroit Lion fans. They unfortunately they crapped out though.
Let's see. They're cursed.
Yeah, they are. Man, and they're what? They were 9-2 going into the weekend. 9-2. And they lose to, who was it? I forgot who they played. Oh, Green Bay. Yeah. Yeah, they lost to Green Bay.
Well, I just hope the NFL gets less woke, less politically correct, so I can go back and start watching them again. But I don't see that coming in my crystal ball of sports.
No. No, unfortunately, and I've given up on the NBA, so I have not watched an NBA game in years and don't intend to. I have no desire to watch the NBA, and that's pretty sad. And speaking of woke, did you see the what came across the wire today? The new Disney CEO admits that they screwed up and that they they took positions on woke causes that they should not have, and it's impacted the company financially. Also, you've got Bud Light dropped from number one to like 16 as a result of their wokeness. So some of these woke companies are starting to understand the impact of their radical positions and their extreme positions. So it'll be interesting to see how Disney tries to recover. Certainly, you know, they've managed to offend, you know, a majority of the population, which has impacted their brand, and rightly so. They should just stay out of it. And unfortunately, the impact to stockholders is great too. So it's not what stockholders want. Let's just put it that way.
Well, it's good to see capitalism butting heads with Marxism. And in the world of Bud Light and Disney, capitalism won out thanks to we the people just said no.
That's correct. That is correct. And you know what? That was our choice. As we have a choice here in the United States, we have a choice to turn the channel. And in this case, the people are speaking and they're turning the channel. So let's see what kind of message or what Disney actually takes from this message. Obviously, they've first step is to recognize that they screwed up and they ruined a brand that Walt Disney, the man, had created, and they should have stuck with that brand and just left well enough alone. But dumbasses.
Right, and if the United States was a communist country, Marxist country, then the Marxist leaders would have Disney as the number one entertainment venue, park, and motion picture company for the United States of America. And they would have no competition, and then they would be in the driver's seat, and they would be happy. But luckily, we're not there yet, and that gives me hope because we are incrementally going closer and closer and moving towards Marxism here in the United States. But these two victories, Vito, tell me that there's still hope left in our Founding Fathers' exceptional documents, being the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
Yeah,
don't got us yet.
You know what? And I have to agree with you. But on the other hand, if you saw the show notes today, you know, one of the things that I put in the show notes has to do with a godless society. And, you know, one of the missions of Marxism is to take God out of society. And the destructive Democrat Party did that in 2016, and they quickly relented, and they put God back in their platform. However, while we're sleeping and we're being distracted, and the USDNC media in America wants us to follow this shiny light and this distraction, there are some conservative news sources out there who are reporting on the facts. And one of them is the Gateway Pundit. And I do want to give a shout out to Jim Hoff. I don't know the man. I don't think I've ever spoken to Jim. Although, you know, I believe Hank Jones may know of him. But I have to give it to Gateway Pundit, because they have reported, and they accurately have, and it was an article written by Rachel M. Emanuel of the Western Journal. Biden officially attempts to remove God from Thanksgiving with 2023 proclamation. And it seems kind of innocent enough that, you know, we can overlook some things and we can just kind of ignore. But you know something, folks? We can't ignore this any longer. Because as Al said, it's about defeating Marxism. And the one thing that Barack Hussein, Satoru Obama brought to the table is Marxism. And he brought that to the table because his political career was launched by two domestic terrorists, Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers. And that cannot be disputed. Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers were part of the Weather Underground, who killed a police officer, blew up federal buildings, and attempted to kill a judge. Matter of fact, Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers, their stepson, their adopted son, is Chase Badwin, who was the state's attorney for the city of San Francisco. And he attempted, Chase Badwin attempted to implement a Marxist lawless program, because Marxism loves anarchy and they love lawlessness. And even the liberals in the left-wing San Francisco could not tolerate what Chase Badwin had implemented. They couldn't tolerate, so much so that the George Soros-sponsored state's attorney, because George Soros is a cancer in our republic, they recalled him last year. They actually, the people of San Francisco actually recalled a radical left-wing Marxist. Now, fast forward to Thanksgiving 2023. Now, we understand that Joe Biden is not a well man, and certainly he's not writing his own material. Joe Biden is surrounded by Barack Hussein's Toro Obama, anti-American and Marxist alumni. And those individuals are the ones that write his dirty work, and they just write up a teleprompter and Joe reads from it. Joe is absolutely useless. So Biden officially attempts to remove God from Thanksgiving with 2023 proclamation. When we say the word Thanksgiving, it presumes the giving of thanks. But to whom is that Thanksgiving? Since the first Thanksgiving on Plymouth Rock and its subsequent establishment as a day of thanks on October 3rd, 1789, the recipient of that thanks and on behalf of the United States of America has always been God. But keeping with the destruction of everything good and virtuous in this nation, this year God has been removed as a recipient of thanks on Thanksgiving. I absolutely commend Rachel M. Emanuel and the Gateway Pundit for publishing this. The article goes on Wednesday, Biden released his Thanksgiving proclamation for 2023. For the first time in American history, the proclamation completely omitted any reference to God or faith. As a nation founded on Judeo-Christian values, this disturbing omission shows how far we have strayed from the original spirit behind America's National Day of Thanksgiving. The pilgrims who celebrated the first Thanksgiving in 1621 were devout Christians fleeing religious persecution. Their celebration followed a brutal first year in the New World, where nearly half of their population perished. Despite unimaginable hardship, their faith remained unshaken. They credited God for sustaining them and bringing them their first successful harvest. Now, keep in mind, folks, that with Marxism, it's also to rewrite history. And it's imperative that the Marxists rewrite the history of pilgrims. And when you're trying to delete God and take God out of society and God out of a nation, this is what you get. Theme carried through the centuries with presidents honoring God in their Thanksgiving proclamations. George Washington implored all Americans to acknowledge God's providence and to unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplication to the great Lord and ruler of nations. On November 28, 1861, Lincoln declared that all government offices will be closed on Thanksgiving Day, writing in his proclamation, "No human counsel hath devised, nor hath any mortal hand worked out these great things. I do therefore invite my fellow citizens in every part of the United States, and also those who are at sea, and those who are sojourning in foreign lands, to set apart and observe the last Thursday of November as a day of thanksgiving and praise to our beneficent Father who dwelt into the heavens. But that wasn't good enough for Joe Biden and his anti-American Marxist regime. No, Joe Biden and his anti-American Marxist regime decided in a proclamation to take God out of society and officially do it on White House letterhead. All families, loved ones, and friends across the country come together to celebrate Thanksgiving. Let us be grateful for all the blessings of this nation and its limitless possibilities. And you know, after reading this proclamation, I'm not going to read the whole thing. The one thing you can deduce from this proclamation is that under a Marxist regime, God is the government. You see, you can't exist without the federal government. That's the mindset of the destructive Democrat Party. That's the mindset of the manic Marxists in Washington, D.C. You know, you didn't build that, and if it wasn't for the government, you couldn't exist. You know, the great Marxist there, Elizabeth Warren, you didn't build that. You know, it was the government who's responsible for your success. Bull. During the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln proclaimed Thanksgiving a national holiday to honor the blessings of our country, even as he fought to preserve our union. This week, Americans will gather with their loved ones and families, celebrating the love they share and the traditions they built together. To those who are also enduring hard times or grieving a loss of loved one, know that we are thinking of you. That's it. That's the extent, okay, of even extending some sort of a thanks. No, folks, it's official. With the Marxists that are in power today in the United States, they have sought and they are seeking and they are actually taking God out of society. They embrace everything that's antithetical to America's foundings. They embrace terrorism. They embrace Hamas. They embrace the Palestinians, which the Palestinians are Hamas, and Hamas is Palestine. And now you've got the destructive Democrat Party taking God out of society. Not one of the so-called U.S. DNC mainstream media outlets even challenged this proclamation. And why would they? Because they all have the same radical anti-American belief system. It's about dismantling our constitutional republic. And the Democrat Party has a track record of this. And yes, I am using the term Democrat and Republican in this instance. But the Republicans, you know, they bear a responsibility. They should be calling out the godless, wicked man, Joe Biden. And, you know, on a Friday show, I labeled Joe Biden the wicked man. You know, a proud look and a lying tongue who sows discord. Well, this is a great example of what a wicked man would write, omitting God from society. Yes, I'm outraged. And I think it's an absolute disgrace that we have a president of the United States, or one who is installed as president of the United States, that thinks very little of the American people, thinks very little of our founding, to see with this left-wing Marxist ideology that's an absolute cancer in our society. And in 2009, Charles Krauthammer was absolutely correct when he stated that Barack Obama will systematically seek to dismantle the U.S. Constitution, and he has done so. And for, you know, we all can agree as well that Barack Hussein Sotoro Obama has not left this administration. Barack Hussein Sotoro Obama's fingerprints are on this. His red fingerprints are on this. His Marxist fingerprints are on this. You know, his communist belief system was ingrained by Frank Marshall Davis as a youth. His Islamic faith has guided him to despise the infidel and despise the Jews. And the track record of the Obama-Biden regime with regards to Israel, as well as the Biden-Harris-Obama regimes embracing of Israel, or I should say the lack of them embracing Israel and coming to the defense of Islamic terrorism, is reprehensible. But it's the same pattern we saw from 2009 to 2016 under Barack Hussein, Satoru Obama. And the same people are in charge in Washington, D.C. today. And this proclamation is disgraceful. It's disgusting. But I wouldn't expect anything less from Joe Biden and his anti-American Obama alumni regime. You know, they like to make fun and they like to criticize and they like to be sarcastic about the MAGA Republicans. Well, you know what? I would take Making America Great over Marxists stealing America. Marxists shredding our U.S. Constitution. Marxists shredding society in favor of chaos and anarchy. And somehow, Making America Great is a bad thing. Why? Because we believe in God. We believe in the founding of this nation. We believe in virtues. There's no virtues with the destructive Democrat Party. There's no virtues in the Uniparty. And this is yet another example, Al, of what we are seeing with the Biden-Harris-Obama regime. Because this proclamation wasn't written just by Joe Biden. It was written by the Obama alumni who are Marxists. So kudos is given right now to Gateway Pundit for having the backbone to print this and to call out this Marxist regime. Al?
Yep.
I want to read one other thing, okay? This is the way Rachel Emanuel of the Gateway of the Western Journal, which is printed by the Gateway Pundit, ended the article. In his proclamation, Biden declared, "This Thanksgiving, we are grateful for our nation and the incredible soul of America." Right? Again, it's the government. Okay, government is the God. Okay, but grateful to whom? Gratitude without a recipient is like a fake Christmas gift under a department store tree. The wrapping is pretty, but it's ultimately worthless and empty. Sadly, Thanksgiving has become a more secular holiday with every passing year, and it seems like Biden decided to put the final nail in the coffin. If we cannot even name the ultimate source in which all Americans, regardless of creed, are rooted historically, we are adrift from the moorings with no destination and no anchor to hold us firm. She summed it up. Rachel summed it up absolutely beautifully.
What a horrible, horrible display by our sitting president.
Oh my God. Everything revolves around the federal government. That the federal government is the God. The federal government is your grandma, your grandpa, your mother, and your father. That's the way these Marxists believe. And what did you say before the show with regards to January 6th? Now the Biden-Harris-Obama regime are looking at video of everyone who is in attendance at the January 6th rally rally protest in Washington, D.C., irrespective of them entering.
Beyond that,
go ahead.
Beyond that, they're going into flight records of everybody who came into D.C. on that day, regardless of whether they were there or not. In fact, the story says that there was one individual who was there for a family function, and within the proximity of Washington, D.C., but never even went to the Capitol that day. They didn't go anywhere near there, and they were put on a no-fly list because they flew in to D.C. on that day, according to the article. Now, I couldn't confirm that from multiple sources, but that's what the article says.
Oh,
and this is 3 years later. Well, 2 years later, almost three.
Well, okay, so that tells you that we have an authoritarian government. That's a dictatorship. You have the federal government going after American citizens, for one, for peaceably assembling. Secondly, this for that particular individual wasn't even in attendance, which means that now it's intimidation and fear by the federal government. So now you've got the Biden-Harris-Obama regime going after a sitting president to manipulate a federal presidential election. They are tampering with a federal election, and now they're going after private citizens for simply traveling to Washington, D.C. I mean, you want to talk about reprehensible?
According to the director of the Air Marshal National Council, Sonia Labasco, the TSA is a special mission for air marshals to track individuals who travel to the D.C. region on the day of the January 6th protest. During a recent interview on Fox, Labasco warned that TSA air marshals are not flying right now. She claimed that the only missions her air marshals are currently conducting are missions on the border with illegal immigrants following the January 2021 people, and we are not doing our regular missions where we're out there looking for the bad guys. So right now on most flights, you're not going to have air marshals, she said. And that came from American Military News Today. So this is very new information to put into your soup mix inside of your grill and process it, because it's quite scary, or should scare the hell out of you. It scares the hell out of me that they're going and track. They're able to track all the traffic going into D.C. by air. I don't know if they're doing it by bus or car or who knows to what lengths they're doing it, but this is just anyone and everyone that came into D.C. on January 6, 2021, after there's been release of footage that shows that there were law enforcement officers that were posing as Trump people, causing trouble at the Capitol, and they came in, they were handcuffed. The video shows two cops coming in, the cop comes in, he's handcuffed, a Capitol police officer uncuffs him, he fist bumps another cop, and then off he goes. And then there's another picture of a cop, a law enforcement officer, flashing his badge as he's walking into the Capitol, not in his Trump gear. And this is just what we've seen. So this is very problematic.
Yeah, absolutely problematic. I mean, this
is
a dictatorship.
I'm glad I drove up with friends. I'd be very nervous right now. Thank goodness it wasn't my vehicle.
Well, let me ask you this. What would put it behind, you know, this regime to have pictures of license plates coming up too, right?
You never know. You never know.
Adolf Hitler would be proud of the Biden-Harris-Obama regime and their dictatorial tactics.
Yeah. Well, assuming the story in American Military News is true, they should be setting off fireworks within the Republican Party to find out what's happening here, because this is a violation of our constitutional rights and freedom of travel.
Yes, it is.
I don't know what particular federal statutes this violates, but we do. Last I checked, we have the freedom to travel from state to state without a passport or anything. You just hop in your car and go. Or if you were a passenger, you hop in your Uber and you don't need any type of driver's license. You can just go from state to state without any restrictions whatsoever. this changes that.
And you know, I had that's why I had an epiphany a couple of weeks ago, and with regards to January 6th and why the fervor to quickly label this an insurrection, and how do you justify the label of an insurrection? The only person to fire a shot on January 6th was a Capitol Police officer. And he did so at an unarmed individual who was waved into the Capitol by other Capitol Police. And what better way to label this an insurrection than to lock some doors, allow the breaching of parts of the Capitol, and then have the Capitol Police fire upon the entrance, the people inside. And in this case, you have Ashley Babbitt, who was shot dead by a Capitol Police officer, and now it enabled Nancy Pelosi and all of the other members of the establishment to label January 6th an insurrection. And the only armed individuals inside the Capitol were the Capitol Police officers. They were the only armed individuals. Nobody fired a shot. Nobody, unlike the Black Lives Matter rallies that they have, we'll call them rallies because they're actually riots. There were no armed individuals inside of the Capitol, with the exception of people having a flagpole. And those individuals that we saw in it were also being escorted around by Capitol Police. So obviously they weren't a threat. So what better way for Nancy Pelosi to label this an insurrection by ensuring that a Capitol Police officer would fire upon those rallygoers who were allowed inside the Capitol and allowed to breach the Capitol building? Every day, and the more that you read, the more that's coming out about January the 6th, and the fact that those that are incarcerated as a result of January 6th have had their Sixth Amendment rights abridged just really stinks to high heaven. And now what we're finding out from the Military Times is that you have the Biden-Harris-Obama regime going after anybody who traveled to Washington, D.C. on January the 6th. That's Gestapo tactics.
Well, according to Lobosco, quote, "We're following people that flew into the National Capital Region in January 2021. Quote, you did not have to go to the Capitol or the rally, and you've been put on a specific list that TSA now has assigned air marshals to follow these people who have not had any type of criminal investigation. They haven't committed a crime. But yet three years later, we're following the same individuals day in and day out and treating them as if they were domestic terrorists, because you could be flagged next time you fly if you are one of these people who have done nothing.
Nothing.
They're put on a domestic terrorist list.
So you can go to a pro-abortion rally in Washington, D.C., and you can burn things in effigy, but that's okay. But going to a rally on January the 6th and listening to the President of the United States, knowing that an imbecile from Delaware could never have garnished 81 million votes, and the irregularities that were occurring in five states in voting can never be questioned, right? No.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck. And speaking of misinformation, the propaganda princess Jean-Pierre, she continues with her propaganda of misinformation and disinformation, just like the extreme Hakeem, the House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, does on a daily basis. So she was questioned about the economy lowering prices, and you see, folks, one quick thing before we go on to the topic of Israel, that's really coming to fruition now with the dishonest Biden-Harris-Obama regime. You know, for the first 12 months, we saw a rapid escalation in prices in the United States as a result of Dopey Joe taking America off of energy independence and becoming energy dependent. And there's a lot of things that have occurred since January 20, 2021. And it's a fact. You can watch the timeline and you can watch how gas prices absolutely started to rise, and they rose rapidly. From paying $1.89 a gallon on January 19, 2021 to paying $5 a gallon by the summer of 2021. And America paid dearly, because it wasn't just about you and I paying $5.25, or in California, Boyd, you know, $7 a gallon for gasoline. It also meant that transportation companies, companies that engage in transportation, would also have to increase prices, and they did. And in doing so, it caused a ripple effect, and the delivery rose rapidly to the point where it was hitting families' budgets. Gas prices, you know, you're talking about $100 a month to increase on both, you know, both if you had two vehicles. Gas prices, utility prices started rising, and we saw grocery prices, then a supply chain issue. And there was absolute silence the first 12 months by Dopey Joe and his regime. And they were sort of oblivious. And actually, they weren't oblivious. They simply ignored. Okay, they simply ignored the fact that prices were escalating and Americans were having a hard time, a difficult time affording this gas, these gas prices that just spiked, skyrocketed. And now, 2.5, 3 years later, we understand why. It was to establish a new baseline. You see, they wanted you, you and me to forget the $1.89 for gasoline. And 53% less in grocery prices was the norm under Donald Trump for the 4 years. Well, for probably 2.5 years, excuse me. And America was energy independent. And America's Strategic Petroleum Reserve was fully funded, meaning that all 714 million barrels of oil was filled to capacity. Today, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is below 340 million barrels of oil. And you have Dopey Joe and his radical anti-American Obama alumni Marxists draining our Strategic Petroleum Reserve to artificially lower gas prices. To the point now where gas prices are still over a dollar a gallon more, but that's the new baseline. Okay? So what Dopey Joe and his dishonest regime are using is, well, in 2021, gas prices were at $5 a gallon, and now they're $3 a gallon. Look, we've reduced prices by 50%, and that's the new baseline. And so the propaganda princess, Karen Jean-Pierre, uses that baseline as fact. And in some way, you know, she's right. When they allowed gas prices to skyrocket to $5-6 a gallon, it's now at $3 a gallon. But how do we get to $3 a gallon when we now rely on OPEC, we now rely on Russia, we now rely on Venezuela and Iran for oil? OPEC is cutting the production of oil by 1 million barrels a day. So the only other source that we can get oil from is the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in order to artificially lower gas prices. But that hasn't lowered transportation costs, because diesel fuel is still 50 to 100% higher than when Dopey Joe was installed on January 20, 2021. So don't be misled by the propaganda princess Karen Jean-Pierre saying that they've lowered prices for the families. They've not done so. Families are still experiencing a 50% increase in gas prices. Families are still experiencing a 50% plus increase in grocery prices. Families are still experiencing a 30, 40, 50, 60% increase in utility costs. Families are still experiencing a 60-70% increase in natural gas prices. And of course, wages haven't gone up as fast as inflation, which has been the highest in 40 years, thanks to Dopey Joe and Communist Kamala Harris regime. Those are the facts. And you see, the numbers, they can fudge the numbers, much like the federal government fudges the budget. There is no budget by the federal government. There's continuing resolutions. So the double talk by the propaganda princess Caron Jean-Pierre once again proves how dishonest this regime is. And I haven't even gotten into the immigration side of it, the migration side of it, the illegal migration side of it. Over 10 million illegal, unvetted, unvaccinated aliens pouring through our borders. Oh, Joe. Good evening, Joe. I'm on the no-fly list. Oh, Joe Gibson's on the no-fly list. See? Here you have the anti-American Biden-Harris regime, and they have taken Joe Gibson and placed him on the no-fly list. And I'll tell you something. This is one radical and dangerous regime. And they cheated to get that way. Go ahead, Al.
That's horrible. And KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, reveals she is split from her former CNN anchor girlfriend or wife. Girlfriend or wife? I'm not sure. Because it doesn't say Suzanne Malveaux. After they were lived together 10 years, that would be a common law marriage, because I'm curious why we never saw this on gay divorce court. But seriously, I'd like to know what the settlement was, but there's nothing. So we don't know. I mean, they're together for 10 years. They have a kid. I guess there's no law that says you have to be married, but it seemed like it would be a good thing to do because gay couples are getting married all the time now. We don't know if they just split, like they broke up, or anything. And I think you're in the public spotlight. These are relevant questions. If you're making policy or dictating policy or communicating policy with the American people, we the people have a right to know how situations like this are handled. The details of it are personal, of course, but the actual divorce or the split up, I think, is fair game. But we're not getting any information.
It's what you're saying then is you're asking that this administration be and their chimpanzees all be transparent. Sure.
Well,
right.
Yeah, how naive. Anyway, I mean, it's not really a huge deal. It doesn't affect my life at all one way or the other. But I am curious because the LGBTQ plus whatever group is dictating policy across the board that does impact my life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a part of that in some way. And, I want to know. If anybody out there knows, please call in, because I've Googled it and I can't, and DuckDuckGo it, and I still can't find any information that is on this one particular question of whether there was, what the settlement was for the split, or if it was a legalized marriage, a legal marriage with a formal divorce or not. And I think culturally it's an important question. It's not just being nosy. I think it's an important cultural milestone on how we as a society move forward with these types of relationships when there's children involved.
Well, here is Wikipedia, okay? Because here's the beacon of truth, okay? In 2020,
okay.
All right. In 2020, Jean-Pierre lived in Washington, D.C. metropolitan area with her partner, former CNN correspondent Suzanne Malveaux, whom she dated until September 2023, and their daughter. So dated. So that didn't say they were married. It says they dated.
Okay. Goldie Hawn, they never got married forever. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing illegal about it. They never got married, but, you know, that's okay. I just like to know these things.
Okay. Move on, named Jean-Pierre as a senior advisor and national spokesman for 2016 presidential election. Move on said she would advise on and serve as a spokesperson around Move On electoral work, including a major effort to stand up to Donald Trump. Oh, so she was at MoveOn.org, too. Oh, George Soros, no wonder why we're getting the propaganda princess can't tell the truth. Oh, Jesus. I'll tell you, I never ever thought that we would see the day when we would have a communist regime in the White House. I mean, this is what President Xi does in communist China to those political enemies. They beat them down. We watched it firsthand in Hong Kong, and how the communist Chinese government released the Wuhan virus, and they absolutely suppressed any type of uprising for democracy in Hong Kong. It's gone. You never heard of it again. Never, ever again, have we?
No, even when they got you, Derek Chauvin, the officer who was involved with the George Floyd incident, he was put in jail, railroaded for murder, for doing his job as an on-duty police officer. He was stabbed in prison, and his mother says that this was allowed to happen. So once they got you, they don't stop. They keep going.
No.
Now they tried to kill Derek Chauvin, and thank God he survived. He's going to probably spend the rest of his years in solitary confinement just to live. Because he was sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison last June for supposedly murdering a guy that was so hopped up on fentanyl and other drugs. His blood was his blood was illegal in 15 states. It was he was a drug addict.
And sadly, the Supreme Court refused to hear his case. And I do want to thank Holzer, our friend the Viking. He sent me the video, the documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis. And if you haven't had a chance, Al, to watch it, I recommend that you watch it. It's eye-opening. There's a lot more to the Derek Chauvin and the Minneapolis Police Department, the police officer's case. You know, there's something about this Marxist mentality to abridge their constitutional rights. And, you know, if there is omission of facts, then the Supreme Court should, in fact, allow a retrial. Now, I don't know where the case could be heard to the point where Derek Chauvin could get a fair trial, because I'm sure one of the things that the Supreme Court did not want to do was reopen for more of the violence that the left wing causes. The violence January 6th pales in comparison to what the left wing does, without a doubt.
Right. Well, Derek Chauvin was in that movie, this Minneapolis movie, and then after he appeared in it, then he got stabbed. So,
gotcha.
From what I understand, so maybe Holger can call in and give us the details on this story, but this is retaliation. And dead
and
men don't talk. Luckily, you survived.
Bigfoot brings up a good point. You know, I thought that cops are normally segregated from the prison, from most prisoners. So that's another question, you know, what exactly occurred. And as you said, Al, you know, is he being sacrificed as a result of what happened? And I don't know. It's very, very troubling. And so I recommend that you watch The Fall of Minneapolis if you get a chance out there. It really is it's an eye-opening documentary.
So what else you got in your bag of tricks?
Well, first, you know what? I want to say hello to everyone in the chat room. Bigfoot, our big patriot. I encourage you all to go to Bigfoot's Place at blogspot.com. Add Bigfoot's Blogspot to your daily reading. I'll tell you what, just a great blogspot. It's like yesterday is a Sasquatch's Sunday Dozen, Saturday stuff. Vehicle explodes at U.S. Canada border crossing. So, you know, I check out bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. Great stories. Big does a fantastic job putting it all together. Also want to say hello to Bring It On Boy. Nice to see you, boy. Ducky Northwest. Hey, Duck, nice to see you. We got Golf Dogs, HOV Radio. Golf gets a Mama Mia for being the first in the chat room. Hank Jones, Poly Sports. Check out Hank on Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Global Patriot Radio. Joe Gibson, nice to see you, Joe. Joe's got a show on Blog Talk Radio, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Restoring Our Republic on Tuesday evenings, 7 p.m. And Boyd the Alaskan, always good to see Boyd. And I want to say hello to everybody out there in podcast land. Another story I have has to do with the thought police, Al. And this has to do with the thought police around the world. And specifically, there is a MMA fighter, martial arts fighter by the name of Conor McGregor. And you all may have seen, if you watch a little sports, very flamboyant, tough guy, lost a couple of fights, but he hails from Ireland. And you know what? He believes in his country. He loves Ireland. He represents Ireland in his fighting. He represents Ireland as an ambassador for the UFC champion, the UFC fighting. So last week in Ireland, there was an incident which occurred. And the incident occurred when a migrant, not of Irish descent, a Muslim migrant at that, Algerian immigrant, was responsible for the stabbing of men, women, and children. Police did not confirm the identity of the man arrested, son of a gun, because of political correctness, obviously. Major riots are taking place in Dublin in response to a mass stabbing earlier today. An Algerian man entered a school and stabbed one woman and three young children. Two of them are in serious condition. You can go to Twitter, and you can see, or you may have already seen, the burning of buses and vehicles. It's just more riots, okay? Violent clashes erupted in Dublin after five injured and stabbing attacks. Violent protests erupted on the streets of Ireland's capital, Dublin, after five people, including a child and a woman, were injured in a stabbing attack. Oh, for the children, remember? You know, the left wing, the multiculturalists, the EU, the UN, they all profess to be for the children, except when it's a violent attack by a mad Muslim. The incident occurred around 1340 local time on Parnell Square East near the bustling O'Connell Street. Two more victims, a six-year-old girl and a five-year-old boy, were stabbed outside a nearby school. Irish police have identified a man in his 50s as a person of interest, and he is currently receiving treatment for serious injuries. Well, authorities have clarified that they are not actively seeking other individuals at this moment and are pursuing a specific line of inquiry. Following the attack, there were tumultuous scenes near the incident site as protesters congregated in the area. Riot shields, batons were employed by officers, and several police vehicles suffered damage during a clash with protesters. A social media post showing a blaze engulfing a building claimed that it was the footage of an arson attack on a building migrants resided in. Another ex-user posted police car on fire in Dublin. The Irish are fed up and angry about fake refugees attacking children and committing all kinds of crimes. All Europeans are fed up and angry. At least one police car and a public bus have been set ablaze. Despite some reports saying that the Algerian immigrant was responsible for the stabbing of men, women, and children, police did not confirm the identity of the man arrested. So Conor McGregor, the former UFC champion, decided that he was calling out Ireland, and he wants a safer society. And he's calling out for safety in Ireland. Conor McGregor spoke out and called for change and a greater safety in Ireland after a stabbing attack outside a school in Dublin, Ireland. Three children, two adults were stabbed by an Algerian immigrant with a 5-year-old girl and a 30-year-old female in critical condition, according to the Counter Signal. Police said the suspect was also injured and his 50-year-old man, who was labeled a person of interest. The motive was not known. Allah Akbar. Go to war in separate groups or go to war altogether. Chapter 4, verse 84. Go to war for the sake of Allah. Lay not burdens on any but yourself and provoke the believers. But who knows what the motive could be? The Irish took to the streets to protest. So Conor McGregor replied to a tweet by a Coach JK. Coach JK tweeted, "So what should happen with this demented scumbag who attacked women and kids today? A few years in jail at our expense to get out and repeat? Needs to be deported immediately and never allowed back, or just hang him. There's no fixing him." And Conor McGregor tweeted, "Torture and death." The next tweet by Conor McGregor was about a journalist, a liberal journalist who smears anybody who's opposed to mass migration. Isn't that something? This is what Conor McGregor is talking about, the so-called journalist who is sitting on a bicycle. The absolute picture of weak and feeble, the most divisive of all is the weak man. One of the most horrific crimes in this nation ever seen has occurred. We do not care anymore what you sad cases have got to say. In a war, you are nothing. We are not backing down. We are only warming up. There will be no backing down until real change is implemented for the safety of our nation. We are not losing any more of our women and children to sick and twisted people who should not even be in Ireland in the first place. Call it what you want. We don't care. May God help us. Ireland for victory. This tweet is labeled by the thought police to be hate speech. And you see, we are not being controlled just in the United States of America by the thought police, by the Biden-Harris-Obama regime who tried to establish the Ministry of Truth and now want to determine what speech is acceptable by the government. Even though we have this thing called the First Amendment and Bill of Rights. And Conor McGregor is speaking out on behalf of the people of Ireland. And yes, Ireland is going through a tough time right now with forced migration as a result of the liberal, the left wing, the multicultural EU. There is nothing indigenous about Muslims in Ireland. But more so, Conor McGregor is speaking out about the safety. And you know, we're all tired of hearing the same excuses that are labeled when an Islamic individual goes jihad. Oh, well, that person suffers from mental illness. Well, if that's the case, then we should demand better vetting of Muslims who are being migrated into countries because this is happening all too frequently. Whether it's the rape gangs, I'm sorry, the grooming gangs in the UK, and now you've got the stabbing victims as a result of an Algerian Muslim who went jihad. And Islamic law defines jihad as war against non-Muslims. And I would venture to say that all five of those individuals were non-Muslims. At what point do the citizens of any country start standing up and speaking out? And now the thought police want to charge Conor McGregor with hate speech. Really? Standing up for your country, standing up for your citizens because a government is too far gone, too far woke, too far politically correct to stand up for the people of their country, i.e. Ireland? At what point do the citizens say enough is enough? You know, this Algerian immigrant, as the politically correct version is, this individual should be incarcerated for life and then deported, because life is 25 years in most countries, deported back to his homeland. But more importantly, the entire chain of family should be deported as well. If you can't live with your brethren, if you fail to assimilate, if you fail to integrate into a society as we are seeing all across Europe, as we've seen in the United States of America, as we see in Canada, as we see in Australia, as we've seen in New Zealand, then why are you there? Ah, in the words of Omar Ahmad, a Palestinian who's the co-founder of CARE, Islam is not in America to be equal, but to become dominant. The Quran, the Muslim book of scripture, should be the highest authority in America. And Islam, the only accepted religion on earth. Not just in America, but on earth. That is the mission. It's not about assimilation into Ireland. It's not about integration into Ireland. It's about domination and supremacy. And now, a colorful figure such as Conor McGregor, who is a proud citizen of Ireland, is now speaking out against this violence. Because he understands Islam is not an island to be equal, but to become dominant. He sees what's happened to the United Kingdom. He sees what's happening in Denmark. He has seen what's happening in Nigeria. And that violence has been brought to Ireland. And now the multiculturalists, the politically correct, want to charge Conor McGregor with a thought crime? Hate speech. It's absolutely sick, Al.
It's terrible. Hopefully he'll run for office.
He should.
He is a fighter. He's a fighter. And he's charismatic enough to do it and to win.
Oh, but of course, they're not talking about, the thought police aren't talking about this. Ex-account at age 38, jailed for sex assault on teenage girl celebrating leaving cert results by Tom Tuitt. A former accountant has been jailed for a disgusting sexual assault on a vulnerable teenage girl he approached while he was celebrating her leaving certificate results. Nabil Habar, an Algerian national with an address of River Village, Athone, CO Westmeath, which is where? It's in Ireland. Pleaded guilty to sexually assaulting the teen in Athlone on a date on August 2021. The married man had worked as an accountant in Algeria, but after coming to Ireland several years ago, he worked in the hospitality industry. The sentencing hearing was told that the victim had been celebrating her results and was walking home with the accused when the accused approached her. The restaurant worker, who had no prior criminal convictions, complimented her, telling her she was beautiful, and he kept walking with her and steered her into a particular direction. The girl ran over to a friend, and Habar was warned to back off. Later, the victim felt confident that Habar was gone and told her pals they could leave her, and she stopped to rest. However, the accused returned, sat beside her, and forcibly kissed her while holding her face and neck while the victim pleaded him to stop. He ended up touching her, and she said no, 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 and he ended up with a sexual assault. So, this also happens in Ireland. And, of course, will the Irish authorities, you know, commend Conor McGregor for speaking out? No, 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 because this is just yet another example of what Ireland is having to go through with regards to forced immigration. So this gentleman, I use that term loosely, by the way, Habar, Nabil Habar, and his entire family should be deported back to Algeria. Obviously, there's a problem. These aren't isolated cases. These are continued cases. There's nothing indigenous with the Algerian people to Ireland. Nothing. Nothing.
Well, it's a pattern of behavior all throughout Europe.
It certainly is.
But there is one ray of light in with the Dutch.
What's that? Because
finally the Dutch have had enough of the ungrateful Muslim freeloaders, rapists, and criminals, which is why Geert Wilders is in an excellent position to become the next prime minister of the Netherlands. He is the new prime minister of the Netherlands, so congratulations to Geert Wilders.
Oh.
Geert Wilders... From the party leader of Party for Freedom, he says, quote, "I have a message for all the Muslims in the Netherlands who do not respect our freedom, our democracy, and our core values, who find the rules of the Quran more important than our secular laws. There are many of those. Research by Professor Kumpan shows that there are seven lakh, and my message to them is, to the Muslims, get out, leave for an Islamic country, then you can enjoy Islamic rules. Those are their rules, but not yours, not ours." Geert Wilders, party leader, Party of Freedom. So congratulations to Geert Wilders and the Dutch, hopefully, new prime minister. This is a great sign.
It is, and you know you know that it's driving the left wing nuts, because the Economist, Economist newspaper, Geert Wilders' Dutch election win is a headache for Europe. So there's Geert Wilders joins Viktor Orban, he joins the president of the Czech Republic, he joins Hungary, the Czech Republic, and Poland. Okay, so now you've got three. Oh, and how about Meloni in Italy? So now you've got four leaders now of EU are absolutely causing agita to the rest of the European Union. You know, the people are sick of this. They really are. I mean, they've watched their country be compromised. And now what they're seeing is that Poland is having success and Hungary's having success by not accepting Muslim migrants. They're not having the problems that Hungary is, I mean, that France is having, and certainly the problems that the UK is having, and now we're watching the problem that Ireland is having. So, yes,
right.
Congratulations.
And the Marxist media, they'll come out and they'll do a few hit pieces to see if you will go off of your go in their path towards the Marxism, and once you resist them and fight them with everything that you have, these Marxist media lackeys and propagandists will go away when they realize that they can't intimidate you. But they'll try, but as long as you don't succumb to their heavy-handed propaganda, lies, and personal attacks, if you can make it through that, then you are good to go, because they'll leave you alone. because they fear the truth. They fear the strong of heart and the strong of will versus a weak Marxist ideology that fails every time.
Well, you know, and I want to, I really want to know, how is it an issue with Geert Wilders? The Economist claims is the Geert Wilders win is a headache for Europe. How is it a headache for Europe? I mean, you're talking about the Economist who embraces the left-wing multicultural tearing down of society. And they want to talk about the xenophobic Freedom Party of Austria. What is the it's xenophobic because you want to limit, you know, Muslim migration to your country so that you don't turn into a Germany, you don't turn into a France where you have priests that are beheaded, or you don't have where members of the military are beheaded in the streets of, I don't know, let's say the streets of London. You know, why is it suddenly xenophobic? But when a Muslim migrant goes jihad and stabs five people, you still have the label of being xenophobic because you speak out against this atrocity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know a little bit about Geert Wilders. What kind of an individual is he?
Very nice man. He's 60 years old, very bright, and he's been under Secret Service protection. He's had to have a security detail with him 24/7 since 2006. So this man has been under attack by the followers of Islam and other Marxists. So his public life has been no picnic, and he's made a lot of sacrifices, personal and financial, to take this path because he believes strongly in freedom and liberty and fighting for that in his Dutch homeland. So yeah, he is a force. He can't be bribed. He can't be intimidated, and that's what makes him so dangerous.
Now, you've had an opportunity to see it firsthand with Geert Wilders. Would you say that he's an opportunist, that he's doing it for show, or has there been a consistent pattern where he stands up for the Dutch nationalism?
Well, no, it is no show. it's been heartache and a very difficult life. He loves Israel. He's been to Israel numerous times, and the path that he's taken is not an easy one. Kind of like what we're doing here. This is not an easy path. We make more enemies than friends with our positions, but our positions have a foundation of freedom, liberty, our Constitution, and our Bill of Rights. We don't venture off of that. If we want to win a popularity contest, this is not the way to do it. I can tell you.
So, what do you think, Al? Now, as long as we've been around, Global Patriot Radio has been around, Geert Wilders' name has been in the circles as far as fighting for his society, for the Dutch society, and fighting and pushing back against Islam and forced immigration. You had an opportunity to speak to Mr. Wilders several years ago, and you don't see a change in his approach to governing, nor the Freedom Party either, do you? The Freedom Party is his Dutch party.
No, there's been no change. He's been ideologically consistent for since 2006 for sure, and before that, before he even started this party, because he was put on trial for hate speech in his own country, and he ended up winning. And part of that attack from his government for speaking about Islam, Islamic doctrine and theology, because he made a movie. Gosh, right off the top of my head, I can't. Fitna. He made Fitna. The movie Fitna. And when that movie came out, there was a woman's body with the Quran tattooed or hinted onto her body, created much discomfort within the Muslim community worldwide, and he was attacked by the worldwide Muslim community for this movie Fitna. And so from then, he's been a target of the followers of Islam with intensity and with such veracity that he had to have, and still does, 24/7 security detail with him of 3 to 4 guys, and that's been his life. But yeah, he's been consistent. Any lesser man, and I wouldn't have blamed him at all, if, because he's 60, so he's been, gosh, doing this since probably his mid-40s. I wouldn't have blamed him for quitting and saying, I can't take this anymore. He's got a wife and kids. He's got no family life, really, because he's on the road constantly. And when he is at home, he's under their security risks, not only for him, but his family. Can you imagine that kind of pressure?
Now, do you think that the fact that Geert Wilders has been around for over 15 years and he's never backed away from his position on immigration and Islam, do you think that finally has resonated with the people, you know, with the Dutch, to show that, you know, this it wasn't lies and misinformation back in 2006, 2007, 2008? What Geert was talking about and predicting is actually what has come true. So that's given a lot of credibility, but it's taken time for that credibility to, you know, stand to the forefront, wouldn't you say?
Oh, without exact, yes, 100%. Because they've been trying to destroy this man, calling him a white nationalist, a Nazi, all the cookie-cutter attacks he's been dealing with. Call him a far right-wing populist. And really, he's just he loves freedom and liberty. Loves Israel, and he is, if he lived in America, he would be a constitutional conservative.
That's interesting. Well, congratulations to Geert Wilders, and certainly when the left-wing media outlets, you know, attack you personally, you know that he's definitely the right person for the job, and the Dutch really have. Maybe they've awakened. I know that they've seen the light about 10 years ago. It really started to shine, and now it's really bright. So we'll see if they've taken a page out of the Hungarians and the Polish knowing what a cancer the forced immigration has been, and the European Union has done a tremendous disservice to the member states.
Yeah, and hopefully this spark of freedom and liberty will light a fire in Europe, and it'll spread and give others the confidence and the strength who believe this way, the same as here does, to continue on this path, and hopefully this seed will grow.
I'm sorry, I was reading one more headline, and it was from The Guardian. Geert Wilders, the Dutch far-right figurehead, sends a chill across Europe. Oh, okay. So he espouses the same, you know, the same position as Viktor Orban in Hungary, as the Polish president, as the Czech president, as, you know, Giorgia Meloni in Italy, and now the EU is their plan of forced migration is coming to an end in the Dutch, in the Netherlands. So we'll have to see what happens.
We'll keep an eye on it for sure.
Oh, jeez. So what do you take from the release yesterday of 17 hostages. One American is released, and that's a four-year-old with dual citizenship who watched her parents be murdered by by Hamas. What do you take of this this ceasefire? And could you also give us explain the definition of Hudna and how HUDNA and how it applies to this ceasefire?
Well, the four-year-old girl that was kidnapped, both her parents were murdered, and then they snatched the kid up and then took the kid into Gaza and held hostage. That's the part about the parents being murdered in front of the child are pretty much left out of every news story that I've seen, and that is just one of hundreds that have happened. But the ceasefire, a Hudna is an Arabic term. It's a tactic of war where when you are weak, you call for a ceasefire so you can rearm, reorganize, and come back and fight another day when you are stronger. So this four-day ceasefire to trade hostages by Hamas for their own prisoners is, to me, don't get me wrong, the hostages, I want them back, I want them safe, mm-hmm. but at what cost? I mean, I'm glad they're back, don't get me wrong, this is a very mm-hmm. difficult topic, but the Hudna, or the ceasefire, it was 4 days, now it's six. They supposedly have 200-plus hostages to play this game out. There's 8,300 prisoners in Israel, and there's a big difference between a prisoner and a hostage. The prisoners in these Israeli jails, these Hamas, Palestinian, Muslim prisoners, are there because they committed crimes, whether it be terrorism, murder, stabbings, attempted murder, you name it. They're in there for actions that they took against the state of Israel. The hostages, of course, are innocent civilians ripped from their homes, ripped from their families, and then taken and held hostage to get these other prisoners released, which is the goal of taking the prisoners, or these Israeli hostages. Now, keep in mind, too, that Bibi, there was one soldier, Jerad Shalat, who was captive for 5 years. Bibi Netanyahu released 1,223 prisoners from Israeli prisons to get one soldier. That's quite a trade, because this is the Achilles heel of Israel, is that they will do anything to get their people back home. And this is an example of it. Hamas has not forgotten that. Bibi is still in office. So they're going to, I believe that Hamas is going to milk this thing for everything that they can. The Israelis are having immense pressure from Biden and the United States and his whole administration to continue with the ceasefire, because for Biden, peace at any cost is good for him politically, and he will tout that he brought peace to the warring Middle East, and he will make himself out to be the peacemaker, and hopefully Israel will see through this and continue the fight to get all of these, to destroy Hamas and take back over the Gaza Strip. Because most people, what you're not hearing in the media, is that during the 1967 war, Israel won and conquered the Gaza Strip and the West. Israel gave, in 2005, there was cities in the Israeli cities in Gaza. In 2005, Israel ripped the people who lived in those cities in Gaza, ripped them from their homes, and gave that land to the Palestinians in the name of peace in 2005. And since that time, Israel has been having a policy of containment and coexistence with Hamas, a terrorist organization. On October 7th, that policy failed miserably. And as a result, we're seeing that Israel, Hamas has built over 300 miles, according to news reports, of tunnels within that 25-square-mile area of Gaza. So
yeah,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that this policy of containment, this policy of coexistence with Hamas has resulted in one of the largest terrorist beehives, enclaves in history.
So
and it failed miserably.
So what's the difference between Hamas terrorist and a Palestinian?
Well, according to, they had elections, 60 to 80% of all the people living in the Gaza Strip voted for Hamas. So they are sympathetic to Hamas. Hamas uses them as human shields. They voluntarily do so because if the Islamic doctrine says that if you die a martyr, you get a first place in heaven or Jannah, and you get to intercede for 75 of your family members. So if you die in jihad, then you are elevated above all others. So there's a religious component as well for a lot of these human shields. Which is very tough.
Hamas is Palestine, and the Palestinians make up Hamas.
Right. So all these people that are having these safe areas to travel down south, where are they going to go? Because Egypt doesn't want them. They've already said they're not taking any because they're a disruptive influence to the Egyptian government, because the Egyptian government, al-Sisi, hates the Muslim Brotherhood. And if you read the Hamas charter, it says that they are an arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. Jordan doesn't want any of these Palestinians, and they've said so publicly because the King of Jordan it took a year and a lot of bloodshed and a war to remove all the Palestinians from Jordan, and we spoke about this last week after they tried to take over Jordan and have a coup, and they failed. And that's what Black September was all about in 1970. So no other Arab country is taking these people. Now, Qatar is taking the three leaders of Hamas, and they're living in comfort, and they have net worths of $4 billion, $4 billion, and $3 billion, respectively, as they're living in safety, as their people are getting butchered. That's what we're dealing with here.
So you have three leaders of Hamas who are worth $11 billion. Palestine doesn't produce anything but terrorism, and they're almost like the leaders of Palestine are almost like, I don't know, like the fake Reverend Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, who hold corporations hostage, and they get their jizya. So Afghanistan, Algeria, Chad, Egypt, Guyana, Indonesia, Iran, Jordan, Kuwait, Lebanon, Libya, Malaysia, Mali, Mauritania, Morocco, Niger, Pakistan, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Senegal, Sudan, Somalia, Tunisia, Turkey, and Palestine, the state of Palestine, were all founding members of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation in 1969. And yet, not one of those 25 nations, 24, will come to the aid and help their fellow Muslim brothers and sisters in Palestine. I mean, if you have Jordan and Egypt, both founding members along with the Palestinian territory of the OIC, how is it that the OIC members are not compelled to accept their Muslim brothers and sisters. And why would it be incumbent for the West, where they have nothing, one, indigenous to the Western nations, the Western cultures, nor there's an issue of integration and assimilation, why would it be incumbent upon, let's say, the United States of America to accept 1 million Palestinian migrants, Gaza migrants, when in fact not one member of the Organization of Islamic Cowards, Islamic Cooperation, are taking their own members?
That's the million-dollar question. Yeah.
Just one other thing. In 1970, Bahrain, Oman, Qatar, Syria, and United Arab Emirates all joined the OIC. So now we have 30 members of the OIC within 2 years, and not one of those Islamic states are stepping up to take their Muslim brothers and sisters of Palestine.
That's the question that every media outlet, if they were curious, would be asking. Why is this suddenly Israel's problem to deal with their enemy that is vacating a war zone of their own creation?
And when these prisoners are released, the 135 prisoners so far have been released? Maybe it was a little bit less, 59? Let me see. I know 39 prisoners were released in this last go-around. When these prisoners are released, these Islamic prisoners released, they immediately call for the death to Israel. So, once again, why are these prisoners being released? There is no peace to be had. And then why isn't the world, where is the United Nations in calling for Hamas to scrap their charter? Because Hamas will be allowed back into Gaza to control Gaza once again once the dust settles, unless, of course, Israel is successful in eradicating this scourge called Hamas.
Great questions. I didn't even think about the eradication of the Hamas charter. The Hamas charter is like our constitution. That'll tell you everything you need to know about who and what Hamas is. And the second sentence in the Hamas charter says that Israel will exist until Islam obliterates it as it has obliterated others before it. Second sentence. Okay, you take that, and they're calling for the obliteration of Israel. You cannot make peace with someone who wants to obliterate you as Islam has obliterated others before it. There's
right?
No wiggle room there. It is crystal clear what your ideology is towards Israel. And yet the world expects Israel to be compassionate. The world expects Israel to do a ceasefire when they're finally winning this war, and they're doing it with professionalism and patience and ruthless brutality. Well, it's not even ruthless brutality, because they're bringing... There's babies that they left in this Al-Shifa hospital with this web of tunnels underneath that they used as a Hamas base. They left babies there to die. Israel went in with incubators to save these babies' lives. So I can't even say that they're doing it ruthlessly, because I know of no other in the middle of a war where the one side is bringing in incubators to help the babies of the other side that they're trying to destroy.
Exactly. And where is the United Nations? Okay, because the United Nations, correct me if I'm wrong, helped draw the lines of Israel in 1948. And now you have the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which is comprised of 57 Islamic states, including the Palestinian territory, and not one of the 57 Islamic states are stepping up to take their Muslim brothers and sisters. So we have two components here. We have the United Nations, the useless nations, absolutely silent with regards to the Hamas charter, which calls for the annihilation of Israel. And secondly, the OIC, which is an arm of the United Nations, has not had their member states accommodate, take, accept their Muslim brothers and sisters, so much so that the Egyptian army, 45 days ago, they were shooting any of the Gazans that were coming across the border, weren't they? No reports of that. And yet, it's the wealth of the American people now that once again is placed on the line. And the wealth of United Arab Emirates, the wealth of Saudi Arabia. Isn't it amazing that Saudi Arabia has a $620 billion public fund that they have used $2 billion+ in the last year, okay, to fund sports figures to break the PGA of America, and yet they won't take any of that $622 billion plus to help their fellow Muslim brothers and sisters. And yet we, because there's over 100 devout fundamental Muslim brotherhooders inside of the Biden-Harris-Obama White House in the executive branch of government, devout fundamental Muslim brotherhooders inside the Biden regime, and now they are controlling the puppet, Joe Biden, to take up to 1 million Gazan refugees. Now, folks, the explanatory memorandum was written by the Muslim Brotherhood in 1994, and it's their plan of action for infiltrating the Western civilization, including the United States of America. And Hamas is part of the Muslim Brotherhood. They are an arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood authored the following. The process of settlement is a civilization jihadist process. With all the world means, the Ikhwan means brotherhood. The Ikhwan must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within, and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers, so it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. Now, a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within. This is what Conor McGregor in Ireland is fighting for. He's fighting against destroying Ireland from within. Geert Wilders is fighting for the Netherlands to destroy the Western civilization from within. He is fighting against Islam from destroying the Netherlands. Viktor Orban of Hungary is fighting for Hungary to fight back against the destruction of the Western civilization from within. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris and Barack Hussein Sotoro Obama has allowed the Muslim Brotherhood into the front door of the White House, into the front door of the executive branch of government. And they are dictating policy, and we are seeing that policy being dictated with regards to the animosity that they have for Israel, the animosity and contempt that they have for Benjamin Netanyahu. This is no coincidence. What's happening here? The United Nations is also allowing the destruction of the Western civilization from within when they are mandating the forced immigration, forced migration into the European Union, into the United States of America. And we patriots of the European Union, we patriots of the United States of America, we patriots of Canada are fighting back. Listen, We don't hate immigrants. But the fact that you are allowing unvetted aliens to come into your country and not go through the legal process is quite troubling. And people aren't held accountable like Alejandro Mayorkas, the Department of Homeland Security. And there's 535 members of Congress who are not holding him accountable, as they should have. And now the Muslim Brotherhood smells weakness. They smell weakness in the West. And once again, 57 Islamic states of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, you can look it up yourself. Go to the UN website, Google OIC, Organization of Islamic Cooperation, and you can see who the member states are. You can see when those states join the OIC. Why is it incumbent upon the United States of America to accept one Muslim refugee who does not intend to assimilate nor integrate? Oh, and by the way, that's not our words. That's Linda Sarsour, a devout fundamental Muslim who went before the Islamic Society of North America at their 55th annual convention, and she told her Muslim brothers and sisters not to assimilate in America, on American soil. I'd say that might be a little treasonous, but hey, it's free speech, right? Unless, of course, you believe in making America great, then it's not free speech, is it? No, the existential threat to America, to our constitutional republic, is each and every destructive Democrat who is elected to Congress, who's elected to the White House, who is a bureaucrat in our government. They are the existential threat to our – and they are signing on to the Muslim Brotherhood's explanatory memorandum to destroy America from within. Whether it's taking God out of society, as Joe Biden showed and his anti-American staff showed on Thanksgiving just 5 days ago, 4 days ago, or it's adopting the Muslim Brotherhood creed, not holding Hamas accountable for their terrorism, and not demanding that they scrap their charter, which calls for the annihilation of Israel. It's reprehensible what we are witnessing today. And it's all by design. The Marxists are creating chaos, and they're living by anarchy. It's disgusting what we're witnessing today in the United States of America. The billions of dollars that are lost from people walking into department stores in New York alone. And what we saw in San Francisco and in California, which caused businesses to close up and to move out of San Francisco proper because of the crime-ridden issues that were going on there, the theft. And this is acceptable to destructive Democrats? And what's the narrative from destructive Democrats in Congress? MAGA Republicans are, give me a break, extreme Hakeem. It's a tired old soundbite. Making America great is not an existential threat to the United States of America, nor our constitutional republic. Making America great is exactly what our founders wanted. And man, it was proven in just 3 short years, and that's what scared the hell out of the establishment in Washington, D.C., because Donald Trump made it look easy despite the fact that the establishment was ridiculing and assassinating the man's character on a daily basis. Yet he took all those arrows, he took all those spears, he took all those bullets, and he still pushed forward, and he proved that America can be the greatest place on earth, and it should be. Nothing like a destructive Democrats dismantling our constitutional republic. Oh, my goodness gracious.
and they're weakening it too. The Iranian-backed Houthis, they fired on a U.S. warship, and the Biden response was nothing. The U.S., however, did capture the terrorists who attempted to hijack that Israeli-owned huge container boat. And how that happened is the hijackers, the jihadis, the crew went into a safe room, and the jihadis couldn't get into the safe room, so they ended up leaving the boat. And then the United States Coast Guard or the United States military caught them. What they do with them, I don't know. We won't know about that. There'll probably be some deal where they release them back to Iran. But so you got one good story, one bad story.
Well, you know, Hank Jones posted in the chat room, and a friend of his stated, the only thing the U.N. has proven in the Middle East is that it holds Israel to standards to which it will never hold her neighbors. And that is so true. That is so true. I mean, if we know nothing else, it's like, where in the hell is the United Nations in demanding that Hamas scrap their charter, which calls for the annihilation of Israel? It's unconscionable what we're witnessing today. And the OIC stands idly by and does nothing, nor do they demand that their member states step up to the plate to help the Gazans. To the point where you have the Gazans fleeing to Egypt, and the Egyptian army is fending them off, is repelling them. And that doesn't make the news. It's not sick. It's about demonizing Israel. I mean, this is incredible what we're witnessing today. You know, I now firmly believe that Joe Biden was installed for one reason. The guy is mindless, he's witless, and he's an empty suit. And Sarge said it right. You know, he's a hollow man, and there's a lot of validity to that, being a hollow man. All you do is let the guy read a teleprompter. Hey Joe, you did a great job on the Abraham Accords. That was your doing. Read the teleprompter. So now he's taking credit for the Abraham Accord. I mean, it's just one lie after another with this chimpanzee. It's unbelievable what we're seeing, what we're witnessing, and somehow that's supposed to be acceptable. A dimwit with a half a brain telling lies day after day is supposed to be acceptable because he's a member of the Democrat Party. He's a member of the establishment. He's killed an economy. And all they do is they tell Joe, read the teleprompter, the economy is the best economy ever. And so that's a fact. Why? Because Dopey Joe has said it over and over again because he's read it off of a teleprompter. In the meantime, the reality is people can't afford their utility bills. People are having to cut costs because of grocery costs. People aren't going out to dinner anymore. They don't have the extra funds to spend. And yet Dopey Joe's out there, this is the best economy. Yeah, Bidenomics is working. Bidenomics is shit. Wow. Oh, Mamma Mia. So I encourage you all to read Gateway Pundit. I encourage you all to go to www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. Add Bigfoot's Blogspot to your daily reading. It's a great eclectic news all around the United States and around the world. You know, go to the OIC website, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. Look for yourself. Check out the 57 Islamic states, which includes the Palestinian territory. Okay, 25 Islamic states now have turned their back. The founding members of the OIC have turned their back on the Gazans. Not to mention the other 32 Islamic states have turned their back on the Gazans, their fellow member of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. And Dopey Joe wants the United States of America to accept 1 million Gazans refugees into America, on top of the 10 plus million illegal, unvetted, unvaccinated aliens who pour through our southern and northern borders. thanks to a feckless open border system and another dummy by the name of Alejandro Mayorkas. Wednesday night, we've got Hank Jones at Poly Sports. 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Check out Hank. I'm sure he'll be talking about the upcoming Iowa-Michigan Conference Championship, Big Ten Conference Championship. Saturday, Mr. Simon Dacnik. Yeah. Minister Simon Dacnik and a beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. Minister Dacnik, I think, is on I think, version 12, I think it is, of the Quran and the... I can't remember now. I apologize. Monday, Al and I will be back at 6 p.m. Eastern Time next week. Check out Andy, Southern Sense Talk Radio, and a great sidekick, author Curtis Bennett, Friday afternoons, 1 to 4 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Check out the Simone Nicole Show, an apolitical show, a great self-help show, Wednesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Spreaker.com, Spreaker.com. You'll get some great music lessons by Bigfoot. Bigfoot is the master of music. Got to say it. Check out Audrey Russo of Real Talk Radio, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursday evenings. Go to AudreyRusso.com. She is a great American and a great patriot at that. Check out Joe Gibson, another great patriot, Restoring Our Republic, Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Al, any parting shots?
Adios, amigos. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Monday.
So we want to wish everyone a belated happy Thanksgiving, and I want to say thank you to Bigfoot, our big patriot. Go to www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. Check out his stories and follow the travels of Bigfoot when he starts traveling. Great American history lesson as well. Bring it on, boy. Nice to see you, boy. Ducky Northwest, always good to see a duck. Hank Jones of Poly Sports. That's Wednesday evening, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. The Alaskan Boy, nice to see you, Boyd. Gulf Dogs, HOV Radio is in the house. Joe Gibson was in the house, too. Thank you, Joe. And Sue from New Mexico is on the board. Good to see you, Sue. Hey, a blessed Thanksgiving holiday season to everyone. We are now approaching the Christmas season. And you all be safe out there. I want to thank you all in podcast land. Everyone, all our Twitter buddies out there. Tone Man, Paisan, he puts out some great tweets, as does Sue and Judy and Pat in Central Florida. She does some great ones too, man. So it's really good to see everybody out there. And thank you all for joining us. Check us out next Monday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You all be safe out there. Ciao for now. Oh, I can't forget Publius, man. And Red Dog.
Yes. It was
the numbers.
Tell you what, I can read a clock.
I tell you, they're smarter than the average monkey.
Thank God they're digital.
I tell you. Oh, geez, I was binging out on The Godfather. They had free Showtime or HBO. I think it was Showtime this weekend. Oh, boy, I watched Godfather 1, Godfather 2, and the death of Don Corleone, or the death of Corleone.
Yeah.
The third, I guess it was the third one.
Yeah, I didn't like the third one. I think I only see it twice. Yeah.
Bring in the Pope and the Catholic Church and the 100 million and how corrupt they are, you didn't like that?
Yeah, you know, it went away from the Corleone family and empire to me. It just didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, number one, of course, is the classic and how they've, you know, arrived. And then number two was good. You watched how Michael Corleone emerges as the Don. I was sorry to see that he killed Fredo. You know, I didn't like that part of it.
Fredo betrayed him.
He betrayed him
with Mo Green. In fact,
yeah, he did.
He betrayed him so much that they put a hit out and he helped.
Yeah, and like you said, he didn't know they were going to do that, and that shows, you know, also the naivety of Fredo. You know, it shows how even how the Godfather also, before he died, he also said that, you know, that Fredo was weak. So, you know, that was absolutely true. But then watch the emergence of Michael. I mean, that just was,
mm-hmm.
God, that first one. Where James Caan slaps him in the jaw and says, oh, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to kill a cop? And this is not personal, Sonny. This is about business. And then Robert, what's his name? Tom Hagen says, you know what, Sonny? That doesn't sound bad. I said, what's wrong with you? But number two,
it was great. God, and then how he took the family legit. That was interesting too, I thought.
Yeah, in the casino business.
Right, and the Cuba loss. That was interesting too.
Yeah, yeah. How Castro takes over Cuba while they were going to get their, him and Hyman Roth were going to set up Cuba for gambling and, you know, cigars and all that stuff and entrepreneurs, IBM, AT&T, you know, all
mm-hmm.
those corporations were going to, you know, make a bundle.
Yeah, that story, it was just genius. Absolute theatrical genius.
Oh, how about, I'm telling you know what the funniest scene is? Senor Roberto in Godfather 2. Okay, so when they do the flashback to when Vito Corleone comes to America and he becomes a Don, he takes over, he kills the Don Fiaro in Little Italy, and he becomes the leader of Little Italy back in the 1920s, and the wife has Mrs. Colombo come to the house, and she said the landlord was going to kick her out of the apartment because she had a dog for her son. And it was Senor Roberto, and he's walking out of the barbershop, and Senor Roberto doesn't know who Don Corleone is, and he tells him he's going to kick his ass from there to the Bronx. And then, like a day later, he comes in and he knocks on the door, and he finds out who Corleone is, Vito Corleone is, and he's actually he's actually the Don, and the rent stays like a before. And then Vito Corleone's just looking at him with his hand on his chin, and he goes, reduce it by $5, and nothing. And then he goes, Dici. And he's all nervous.
And she can keep the dog.
And she can keep the dog, yeah.
And Talia Shire?
Oh.
She played her role great. I hated her at the end.
Man. Connie? Oh, man. She was good.
Yeah.
She really was. You know, she is Martin Scorsese. No. Who is the director of that? Was it Scorsese? No. Oh, my God. Hank will know this, too. I forgot. Francis Ford Coppola. That was Francis Ford Coppola's
That's
sister.
Right.
I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. She was in other movies as well. And Nicolas Cage is somehow mixed up in the Coppola family. and then his brother.
Yeah, she was. She was in Rocky. Yeah. She was in Rocky. She was Rocky's wife.
Adrian. I forgot about her godfather role. That was before Rocky, but that was just. She even betrayed. She was the crazy sister.
She was, but she was. Yeah, she was the crazy sister. Yeah. What do you think? I'm a travel agent. You come to me. Yeah. Oh man, I loved it. She was good.
Yeah, I tell you, I couldn't stop. Watch, it was like one after another, and it was just great.
Oh, so Nicolas Cage is Francis Ford Coppola's nephew.
Oh, okay, that's the connection. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, I knew there was something in there.
Yeah, and Carlo, who played her husband. His name was Johnny something. I think he's from Jacksonville, Florida, I thought. But he didn't do anything after that. No, Carlo, you're out of the family. You think I'm going to make my wife a widow? And Clemenza chokes him in the car. What happened to that car? They went in an accident. Everybody's okay.
That's right. I forgot the one-liner. That was the car. Now, okay.
Yeah.
Now the one-liner makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. But everybody's okay.
Yeah. I didn't catch that. That's pretty cool. That's funny.
Take the cannolis, leave the guns.
Yeah.
So, I didn't know this, but
yeah,
Hank told
you take
me,
a bite first of the poison cannoli. You take a bite first.
Well, after they whack Paulie, pull over. I got to take a leak.
Mm-hmm.
And they whack Paulie, and he looks at I forgot the driver's name. He says, "Leave the gun, take the cannoli." So that wasn't in the book. That was ad lib.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
That was a great line.
Yeah, it really was. Leave the gun, take the cannoli. That's like a classic. Today, I settled it with all five families. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
what's that?
I said, who was it, Carlo? Was it Barzini? Or Battaglia? Now, don't insult me. It was Barzini. Ah, you think I'd make my sister a widow?
They're like, yeah, every 10 years we have to do this. This is just how it goes. Then it was Corleone's time at the end on the last one. They tried to take him out.
Yes.
But that was the
yep.
church. The church got involved with that $100 million endowment. I guess that was the pinnacle of legitimacy within the church. But the church ended up being as corrupt as everybody else. That's what I took away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe that's what Coppola was probably trying to portray, right?
Yeah, and that probably pissed a lot of people off in a big way.
I just didn't like the. I didn't like the three. I didn't like the daughter being killed. I thought it was compared to the first two. You know, they Tom Hagen. You know, they couldn't bring back Robert Duvall, so they brought in George Hamilton.
I didn't like Hamilton in that role. No, that was a bad. It didn't fit.
Talia Shire, she was excellent still, I think. You know, she did a fantastic job, but everything she does was really good. I mean, you know, her transformation with Rocky, going from that timid and meek, you know, pet store worker to being a strong wife, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're human, you know? You know, all that, you know.
Oh,
so.
Hey, check your email. I found that the veto email. I found the interview with Geert from 14 years ago.
No way. Really?
Yeah.
That was up in the Northeast, I believe, right?
I sent it to you for laughs, huh?
Okay. That was up in the Northeast, I believe, right?
I don't even remember where it was. Could have been Philadelphia, maybe. But I'm guessing.
I think so. I think that's where, because I remember you going up there. And Yeah.
You remember that? Jeez, that was
so
long ago.
I do. It was 14 years ago.
God almighty.
Believe that?
Yeah. No.
I do, and I you know, it's amazing. There's two people that have not changed, well, aside from us two, who have not changed our views or our ways. One of them is Osama Dakduk, and Osama's been passionate as long as we've known him, just outstanding, and Geert Wilders. And Geert has, that's why I asked you if you thought, you know, anybody wanted to question the legitimacy of Geert Wilders, you know, There's the prime example. This man has not changed his position in 15 years that we've known him. Or you've known
him. That was a great observation, too, because I didn't really put that all together, but way true. That's rare in politics.
It really is. I mean, he's the pre-Trump, right? he's lasted a lot of, you know, scrutiny. Hirsi Ali. I mean, she's not been in the news at all. And, you know, Geert Wilders just continues to, as all these people come and go, he still remains.
Yeah. Last I heard about Hirsi Ali, she converted to Christianity.
Cool.
She went from Islam to atheism, and then recently she just converted to Christianity.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. All right. You have a good evening.
All right, you too. Great show. That sure went fast.
It sure did. It sure did. We'll keep a watch out what's going on in Europe, and you'll have to watch Geert to see, you know, how the EU attempts to attack him now. I'm sure they will be relentless in their attacks on him. Hopefully Viktor Orban and the president of Poland and what's her name, Maloney, Georgia Maloney, will come to step up and defend this guy, as they should.
Yep. Well, that'll be three of the four horsemen, so, and a horsewoman.
Horse woman.
Yeah. Oh, no woman. Just that could be a strong triangle of freedom and liberty right there. So
absolutely. All right, Al. Have a good evening.
All right, you do the same, and have a great week.
Yeah, you too. I'll talk to you later. Bye,
right.
Sue. Have a good
evening.
Bye, Sue. Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.